It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levonier, your host for this hour of continuing series. Later on, The Man in the Iron Mask, Firefighters, and the Adventures of Marco Polo. But first, episode 4 of 5 of The Valentine Matter on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, a CBS broadcast from November 3rd, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
What is all this, Johnny?
Who's this?
Roy Vickers, New Britain Mutual. What happened to Valentine?
He was gunned down last night going into a hotel with his wife.
No.
The police here are turning the city upside down trying to get a line on 2 unidentified gunmen.
Well, couldn't you keep him alive?
I couldn't even find him.
Well, this is no time to be yelling at each other. I just left his daughter.
Huh? She filed claim already? Through that lawyer Webster?
No. She didn't even know anything about him until the papers broke the story. Well, I'm sorry I got annoyed for a second. Do what you can, Johnny. I'll want a full report.
Sure, Roy, sure.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is a further accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Item 9, $7 for dinner. I had it with Inspector Charles DeBaca, New Orleans Police. He was a haggard, tired-looking man about that time. All of us were.
You want some more coffee?
No, thanks.
Two men... Both about 6 feet, wearing dark suits and hats, medium to slight builds. One possibly 35, the other possibly 40.
Well, that about ties up with the description of the two men who plugged Valentine earlier and earned him a place in the hospital.
Yeah. We got more of a chance this time, though. There'll be some other witnesses. Somebody has to tell us what kind of a car they had and what direction they went.
One thing, they weren't using silencers anymore.
No, but they did a professional job. I think Valentine knew him, climbed out of that hospital bed to go out looking for him.
Sounds reasonable. How do you figure the rest of it, Inspector?
Well, Valentine saw the newspaper story and knew his wife was in town. He went over, got her. And I take it they were going to check into a new hotel when their friend showed up.
She just happened to get in the way, huh?
Sure. Why'd anybody want to shoot her?
Why would anybody want to shoot him?
Well, because no matter what he was now or how he was playing it, he still lived pretty hard way back then. A man who's lived the kind of life he has and done the things he has is bound to make a few enemies who'll remember.
No, I think it has something to do with his family. I agree with you that Valentine probably made enemies all over. But he wasn't the kind of man to get excited about any of those kind of people. He pretty well knew how to take care of himself and handle trouble. That's why he was out looking for them.
You sound pretty certain.
It seems to me that if Valentine had been expecting trouble from some of the old-timers, he'd have carried a gun.
You got a point. But then again, he was pretty gentled up. You know how he spent most of his time? Painting.
Huh?
And that house he bought out in Jefferson Parish is covered with pictures he's done since he's been out. Oils. Pretty good, too. When he wasn't painting it, he was listening to music.
Huh. You'd hardly think of Danny Valentine taking up the arts.
Hardly ever. Well, I've got to make a call and get busy.
Yeah. Inspector.
Yeah?
Any objection to me going out and looking around that house?
It's your privilege. Personally, I'm going to look around town for a couple of gunmen.
Anyone out there now?
His cook. Name's Yachino. Nice woman.
Okay, I'll keep in touch with you, Inspector.
Do that. Dollar.
Now what?
You forgot to tell me you looked up the old family lawyer, Conrad Webster, the other night.
Oh, I was trying to find Valentine, the same as you.
Well, if you happen to run into Webster again, you tell him to drop in and see me.
Huh?
He's missing.
I didn't know what to say to that, so I left him standing there and went back to my hotel and shaved, changed clothes, and tried to go over the whole thing in my mind. I did phone into the police station and find out that the slugs that had killed Valentine and his wife were from an Italian-make pistol, a rum barrel, 37.5 caliber, so far untraced. Expense account item 10, cost of cab, from my hotel to Danny Valentine's house in Jefferson Parish.
Yes, sir.
How do you do? Are you Mrs. Iacchino?
Yes, sir. Who are you, please?
My name is Johnny Dollar, Mrs. Iacchino. I'm from New Britain Mutual Insurance Company. I'd like to talk to you, if I may.
About Mr. Valentine?
Yes.
Not right now, Mr. Dallas. Some other time, huh?
Well, if you prefer it that way, Mrs. Iacino, but...
It's been a hard day here. I mean, Mr. Valentine's death and his wife being killed with him. All of these policemen in and out of here, and now Miss Ward and all.
Miss Ward? His daughter?
Yes, she's here. Arrived 2 hours ago. She's... Stay here.
Could I see her?
You come tomorrow, Mr. Dollar, please. And tomorrow...
Mrs. Iacino.
Yes, Miss Ward.
Who is it?
Mr. Dollar. He's from the insurance company.
Insurance company?
Yes.
I'd like to talk to Mrs. Iacino.
Teresa Ward stood at the base of the iron grill stairway, tall and dark-eyed. And I saw that, like her mother, she had a quiet intensity about her face that made it beautiful. At the same time, ageless. She smiled politely at me. I could only stand there without speaking for a long moment, looking at her. Then Mrs. Iacino excused herself, and we were alone.
I wanted to talk to someone who might be able to give me a little more information about all this. It's all quite new to me.
I'll tell you what I can, Miss Ward.
My name is Valentine, isn't it? Really, Valentine?
Yes, it is.
Well, suppose we correct that mistake right now.
Sure. There's nothing wrong with Valentine.
From what a Mr. Vickers from the insurance office in Hartford told me, I'm to be quite well off because of this man that was murdered.
You mean Dan Valentine?
Yes, Dan Valentine. They tell me he was my father.
Who told you?
Oh, reporters at home and your insurance company. Mother told me my name was Ward. Poor thing. Must have been difficult for her over the years, keeping the secret from me.
Yes, she told me she thought it was the best thing. She, well, the same as he did.
Tell me about my father. Was he a bad man?
Oh, as good or as bad as the Volstead Act made people. I only met him a couple of times.
To awaken one morning and discover that you're the only daughter of a famous racketeer who's been murdered.
Look, Miss Ward, if he had anything to do with the way you turned out, with what you seem to possess within yourself, I'd say offhand that whatever he was or did, he thought of you.
Are you flattering me?
I'm not trying to. You seem like a very nice person.
And so do you, Mr. Dollar. Will you tell me all about this, please?
Well, let's see. You're 21, isn't that right?
Yes.
Just about 15 years ago or so, your father was on trial for income tax evasion. Just before he was convicted, he set up a trust fund with my insurance company to provide for you. It's been paying money for your support and education ever since. According to the terms of the trust, all of the money becomes yours now that your mother and father are dead. It comes to well over $50,000.
That's all there is to it?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I'm grateful to him. I suppose I should be grateful. I can't say that I'm particularly sorry about his death any more than I would be if any other human being died violently somewhere. But about Mother's death, I miss her very much already, Mr. Dollar.
She was holding up pretty well until that point. Then she let go. I held her in my arms and I talked to her. I told her what I knew of her father's life and death. She told me how she'd been reared so far removed from anything that might have connected her in the least way with the Valentine name. Altogether, it was a revealing conversation for both of us. Mrs. Iacino brought us some food and wine.
How long will you be in New Orleans?
Until all of this is straightened out.
You mean until they find out who killed my mother and father?
Yes. How about you?
Oh, I really don't know. After the funerals, I suppose I'll go back. But I wanted to see him, to see what he looked like, what kind of life he led. He was just an ordinary man, wasn't he? You seen these pictures before?
No, this is my first time in the house. Looked like Italian landscapes to me. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Must have been something he had with Mother.
Hmm?
She was from Italy.
May I ask you something?
Yes.
How do you feel about him now?
Is this for your report?
For myself.
Well, since you've been here, these last 2 hours, I've begun to think of him for what he was. My father, I mean. I'd like to know why he was killed and who did it. Will I see you again?
I hope so. Terry.
Yes?
I hope so very much.
So do I, Johnny.
I left her at the door that night with a warm sensation inside of me. Something I certainly hadn't expected in the business at hand. The next morning, I was back at the house talking to Mrs. Iacino. She gave me all the information she could remember about Valentine's activities. All of it accurate, but lacking in any possible clue as to the identity of the two men who had killed him and his wife. I had breakfast with Terry there and helped her with funeral arrangements. Then I spent a solid 12 hours with Inspector DeBaca, who had still not located or identified the two mysterious men. However, there were other developments.
This may be something, Johnny.
Oh?
Conrad Webster's been found.
Huh?
Up by Lake Punch train. Just identified him. He was shot to death with a 37.5.
Italian gun?
Yeah. Just like the one that killed Dan Valentine and his wife.
It later developed that the slugs taken from Webster's body, when compared with those that had killed the Valentines, were fired from the same weapon. The case took on proportions. Every available bit of information regarding the two ex-big shots of the 20s was located, read, and reread. It meant activity in cities like St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, and New York. But no new information as to the identity of the killers. I went back to the house.
Johnny.
Here. What is this? You're shaking.
Hold me, please.
Sure.
I suppose I'm being a terrible fool about it all, Johnny, but they've been after me all day. Cheap little things. Newspaper syndicate wants me to write my exclusive story as the shadowed daughter of Dan Valentine. Fairy princess of a racketeer.
Take it easy.
Even Hollywood called a producer. Oh, Johnny, I shouldn't have come here at all.
Then what would I have done, Terry?
What would I have done? Make yourself a drink, Johnny. I'll go put on a new face.
It had become apparent to me in the short time I'd known her that she'd grown to love the memory of her father. Also, that the pressure of all that had happened was beginning to take its toll on her. We were walking down the gravel path away from the house. She was quieted down. I suppose I was thinking how nice it would be to kiss her. I twisted, trying for the gun inside my pocket, but there was nobody to shoot at. The two men who had fired the guns were already out of sight. I was alone with Terry Valentine, who was hanging on the gate. I caught her before she fell.
Why, me, Johnny, why?
She was dead before I could answer.
There'll be the final intriguing episode in our story of the Valentine matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, a sober lesson in how long, how far, and how deadly one man's hate can be. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for another exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday, episode 4 of 5 of The Valentine Matter, from November 3rd, 1955, on CBS. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lefonier. Now time for episode 4 in the running series of The Adventures of Marco Polo, a syndicated episode from the 1940s.
Now present The Adventures of Marco Polo. Marco Polo was taking his first great journey, accompanied by his father, his uncle Matthew, and his servant Benno. As the party were crossing the northern desert towards Persia, they were captured by the soldiers of Prince Alauddin, a notorious robber prince who was known as the Old Man of the Mountain. Prince Alauddin and his warriors were usually drugged with hashish, which gave them the desire to kill and murder. So they were called hashishians, from which we derive our modern word assassins. Marco Polo and his companions were forced to drink a priceless wine, and then they realized that they had been either drugged or poisoned. Some hours later, Marco Polo opened his eyes. Then he looked around him. He was in a room furnished in almost unbelievable luxury, lying on a divan covered with priceless silks and satins. The walls were hung with rich gold and silver draperies. Nearby was a table, which appeared to be made of solid gold. On this table was a golden flagon. With difficulty, Marco Polo struggled to his feet. Where am I? What has happened to me? What strange place is this? A golden table. And golden flagon filled with wine. Dare I drink from it? Oh, my throat is parched.
Drink, Marco Polo. The wine will revive you.
Who spoke?
Azoni spoke to you. Look upon me. Am I not beautiful?
The most beautiful woman I have ever seen. What do you hear? Tell me, where am I?
You are in paradise, Marco Polo.
In paradise? Are you an angel?
Perchance. Let me pour you a drink of this rare wine.
Oh, give me the wine. I almost die of thirst.
Drink deep, Marco Polo.
I will drink gladly.
Now tell me that your head is clear.
Let me think. Oh, yes, sir. I remember. The Old Man of the Mountain poisoned us.
Prince Alauddin bade you drink wine, and he transported you to paradise.
But my father, my uncle, where are they?
Look you down at the far end of this room.
I see a divan. There is a man asleep there.
That man is your father. He will soon awaken. And see over to the left where I am pointing.
Another divan. My uncle sleeps there.
Soon he will awaken to taste the joys of paradise. Drink more of this wine, Marco Polo.
Oh, yes, give me more wine. Never have I tasted such golden joy.
Such wine is only given to those who are in paradise.
Do you mean that I am dead?
Rest your head upon the divan. Look you in my eyes, Marco Polo. You have said that I am beautiful.
You are beautiful. But I must go to my father, my uncle. They want my aid.
Oh, rest a while. Clasp your arms around me.
Are all the angels in paradise as beautiful as you?
Paradise is a place of beauty, Marco Polo.
What are you called?
You shall call me Azoni.
Azoni, you are very beautiful. But I cannot believe that I am dead, that this is paradise. I am a Christian, not a Muslim. Why should I come to the Muslim paradise?
Perhaps my beauty is not to your taste, Marco Polo. You have but to clap your hands for beautiful women to appear. But I was chosen to bring happiness to you because of my peerless beauty.
I must be dreaming.
Look you, I draw these silken draperies around the divan. Now we are alone together. Can you see through these gossamer draperies?
I can see that my father has stirred. He is alive, too.
He is in paradise. Quiet. Watch and listen, Marco Polo.
Where am I? What has happened to me? Marco! Nothing, Albino!
My father! I am here!
Quiet. You must not speak to your father.
I heard Marco's voice. Come to me, Marco! I need your aid.
I am coming, father. Azoni, cast aside these draperies. Let me go to my father.
Those magic silken draperies hold you prisoner, Marco Polo.
Oh, this is maddening. Let me tear the draperies down. Father, I am coming to you.
Marco, my son, where are you?
A moment, Marco Polo. I will draw the draperies aside.
Here I am, father.
Marco, what has happened?
This woman says that we are in paradise. Look, Uncle Matthew sleeps on that divan.
In truth, we cannot be in paradise.
Niccolo Polo, drink you of this wine.
It will clear your head as it cleared the head of your son.
Drink the wine, Father. It is not harmful.
I will gladly drink wine. My thirst almost kills me.
Drink from this golden cup, proffered by the hands of Azone. Am I not beautiful, Niccolo Polo?
You are beautiful. I drink to you, fair maiden. Ah, that's better. Now tell me, where are we? I remember Prince Alodin tricked us, saying he would send us to paradise.
Of a truth, he has sent you to paradise, Niccolo Polo. The fairest women in paradise are yours to command. Gold, silver, jewels are yours to do with as you will.
Marco, does she mean that we are dead?
I think so, Father. But see, Uncle Matthew stirs now. I suppose he will want wine, too.
Help! Help! We've been poisoned! The old man
of
the mountain has killed us.
Matthew, we are here with you.
Piccolo, Marco, what does this mean?
It seems that we are in paradise.
Let me attend to Matthew Polo. Come, Matthew Polo, drink of this wine.
Who are you?
I am Azone, yours to command. You are in truth a handsome man, Matthew Polo. Azone likes you.
Give me wine. Do not cling around my neck like that.
You are in paradise. Here I strike upon this golden gong. What will happen?
Niccolo, am I mad or are you?
Mayhap, we are all mad, brother.
Look, beautiful women, scores of them, dancing around us.
Other angels of paradise. Perhaps the Zoni does not meet with your approval. Or choose for yourself angels who will serve you faithfully.
I do not like this, Niccolo. We are good Christians. This seems to me to be a Muslim paradise,
perhaps. Because we were killed by a Muslim. We were sent here in error.
Go away, you siren. I am no ladies' man. Niccolo, bid this girl unhand me.
Our visitors are strange to paradise. It seems that they do not like us.
What are you laughing at, Marco?
The sight of you being embraced by a beautiful angel, Uncle Mafio.
Well, why shouldn't I be embraced? I wish these girls would stop dancing around us. They're making me giddy.
Perhaps our visitors to paradise are hungry. I strike the gong again. Watch, listen.
What is going to happen now?
More beautiful women are coming in bearing golden trays. And of a truth to tell, I am hungry. The food on those trays looks tempting.
Peacocks from paradise, roasted and garnished, are on that tray, each with a priceless jewel in its beak.
Ah, well, I'm going to partake of a delicate morsel.
And I think I shall too, my son.
Barbaric food. And where is Benno?
Oh, Azone, where is our servant Benno?
In the paradise for servants. He cannot come here with his masters, but he is happy to. Oh, come. There are many delicacies which are being offered to you. Many wines, spices, and precious foods. You're in paradise. Anything may be yours for the asking.
I ask to return to Earth. I was happier there.
Happier away from paradise, Matthew? Would I clasp you and I look in your eyes?
Let me go. Niccolo, Marco, this is not right.
Well, you are in paradise, and an angel is offering you her favors, my uncle.
Give me a piece of that roasted peacock. I feel a little hungry myself.
Roasted peacock for a visitor to paradise. And what else do you command?
Well, do you really think we are in paradise, Father?
I have never been surrounded by so much beauty and so much wealth. I suppose this is a Muslim idea of paradise, but we are out of place here.
What's that? Something else is going to happen.
The women are all disappearing. Draperies are coming down from above. What a riot of color.
Where are all the servants and the beauteous maidens? They have gone. Gone as if they were spirited away. The draperies hid them from our view. What is going to happen now? I'm sure we're dreaming.
The draperies are being swept aside. See, the servants and the maidens have all gone. There is no one in the room.
Look! The great golden doors are sliding apart.
Who comes?
Why, it is the old man of the mountain with his men-at-arms. So we are still alive.
Well, my friend, was it not a taste of paradise? Was it to your liking?
Tell me, mighty prince, are we alive or dead?
Am I not a mighty prince that I can transport you to paradise?
That is no answer to my question. Are we alive or dead?
You are alive, my friend. But you partook of a drug which is called hashish. a drug of which I am the master. You knew many joys. You saw many beauteous things when you had that drug. You may always know those joys if you remain in my service. That was what I meant by paradise.
It is not a paradise which I like, Prince of Lourdes.
It is a paradise which I like. But your tired feeling is passing. Hashish is a mighty drug, and soon will come upon you the desire to kill. Mayhap you will kill each other. You will be left alone for the space of one more hour. When I return, you may be all living, or two of you may be dead. Who knows? The young stripling Marco Polo may kill his father and his uncle. If he does, he will be pleased to remain in my service. Come, lock the doors again.
Oh, the old man of the mountain is a very unpleasant person, and I think he's a little mad.
The Adventures of Marco Polo on Tuned to Yesterday, Episode 4 in a syndicated broadcast. We now continue with Firefighters, following along with this series, now with Episode 10, heard on November 25th, 1949.
Five bells. Stand by all stations.
Attention, all districts. A five-alarm fire. Five bells. Move in immediately.
That's it. Let's roll.
Let's go. Firefighters.
Presenting Firefighters. The true-to-life story of our unsung heroes who stand ready to ride by day or night against our most murderous enemy, the demon of fire. In just a minute, we'll join Tim Collins, rookie fireman, in his fight for fresh air in the fourth floor of the burning warehouse. The floor below is a raging inferno from which smoke and terrific heat rise to impede the progress of Tim and Fireman Murphy toward the windows they must shatter to admit clean air. As the firefighters grope through the murk and fumes, well, we'll take just a pause to bring you this message. Let's go, firefighters. Let's go to the fourth floor of the burning warehouse, where you remember Tim Collins, rookie fireman, has just heard feeble cries for help. And Fireman Murphy exclaimed,
"What's that, Collins? What did you say?"
"Oh, me? I thought that was you.
Listen.
That's somebody in trouble, Murphy. There's somebody in here. Someone caught among those big crates and boxes."
"All right, come on, Collins. Crawl on your chest. Keep your face down where the air is cleaner."
"Hey, no, Murphy, over that way. That voice is over there to your left."
"Never mind that. First, we've got to smash out this window."
"But whoever that is, he must be nearly done
if
for."
"If we don't get fresh air and clear out this smoke, we'll all be done for." "Oh. Now, back, Collins. Look out for my axe. I'm going to swing."
All right, I've got my wind back, Murphy. Now, what's our plan?"
We'll hook ourselves up with this life vest. Now, you start back toward where you think that voice is located. At the same time, I'll work along this wall, smash out the windows, get more air, and let the smoke clear out faster."
"All right, then I'll find out whoever that is that's caught under those crates. We'll follow the lifeline back to you." "Oh, good grief, look there."
"Huh, where?"
"There. Those crates are beginning to smolder. The fire's working up through the floor."
"Yeah, I was expecting that. This whole place might go any moment. Now get started, Collins. You keep your face down. No matter how hot it is, keep down so you can breathe."
"Fourth call, commanders. Fourth call, commanders, this way."
"Hurry, Chief. Hurry, Chief.
Oh, this is a bad fire, boys. A tough one. Now, here's the situation. First and second alarm engine companies are working the stairs at each end of the warehouse, carrying hose lines as close as they can to the seat of the flame. All available ladders are at the third floor windows. Now, look up there, you men. You see, third alarm engine men are pouring water through those third floor windows. But there's trouble on the fourth floor.
Chief Cody. Chief, there's Murphy now.
Where? Good man. He's breaking out the fourth floor windows.
Have we run ladders up there, sir?
Boys, that's our trouble. We sent out the fourth alarm because we need ladders at those windows.
But no water. We can't send water yet into that floor.
No, we can't send water in yet. Because Murphy and young Collins from 3-1's company are working that floor. And the stream from a hose could kill them both. So get those ladders up. But you engine company commanders, hold those hoses back, you understand me? Until I say the word.
Oh, Murphy's signaling, Chief. Stand by that window. We're coming up.
He heard you. He waved his arm. But what in blazes?
He's left the window.
Look, that smoke is getting thicker.
If the fire is breaking through, Chief, those men are goners.
Not yet. Those floors were built to resist fire. And they're resisting so far. No knowing how much longer, but just...
But there's conduction, Chief. If that terrific heat is conducted through the flooring, if those crates of merchandise on the fourth floor get hot enough...
I know. They'll burst into flame from heat alone. You don't have to teach me how fire acts, Lieutenant Kennedy.
There go the ladders. Now we'll get those men out in a hurry.
Collins! If you can hear me, jerk that lifeline!
Better save my breath. Just tug on the line. One, two.
Okay, Collins, I got it. Now keep on. Jerk the line if you're okay.
I'm okay. I can stand it. Not much longer, but I can stand it.
Help, I'm gone.
I'm coming. Oh, blast that smoke.
Help.
He's over here. Somewhere in these crates.
Help, I can't move.
Ah, I got you.
Help.
All right, now lie still.
Help.
Try not to breathe.
Help me, somebody help me.
Oh, good grief, he's out of his head.
Help.
Poor fella. Well, he's lucky. Now, where's he caught?
Help me.
Oh, that crate.
Oh,
it's right on his leg. Get my hands under it.
Help, won't somebody come?
Okay,
help.
Mister, okay, somebody's here.
Help
now,
me.
Now, he... And heave again.
Help me, somebody, help.
Huh? I was?
Help.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember.
Help.
Yeah. All right, take it easy, mister. Gotta get out now.
Help.
Come on, mister. Come on, climb aboard.
Help me.
Climb aboard for the piggyback ride. Up we go.
Help.
All right,
this way, Collins. Okay. Good, you got your man. That's fine. I'll take him now.
Uh-huh.
Collins, I said I'll take him now.
Oh. Yeah, sure. I'll take him.
I got him. Now, follow me. Here we are, Collins. Get your head over that window sill.
I'm a god. Murphy, he's out of his head.
Huh? You're not much better. You keep your head out of that window.
Yeah.
I can see he's out of his head. His leg's not broken, but it's badly crushed.
Help me.
You, Collins. The ladders are coming up. The way those crates are smoldering there, we can't afford to wait. How do you feel?
Me, I'm fine. Yeah, I never felt better.
Oh, yeah. Let me look at you.
What do you think, Lou? Smoke is going to knock me out?
You know, smoke poisoning can do queer things to you.
Smoke poisoning? Not for me. I eat the stuff.
Okay. Okay, I guess you'll do. Here. Lend me a hand with this knife right here. Holy blazes. My fingers are all tough.
What are you trying to do?
Bowling, Collins. Make a bowling with a bite in it.
Yeah, I get it. Make a bite and a bowling and lower this fella to the ground. Let me have that line, Murphy.
I'll give it a few turns around this iron hook in the wall here. That'll hold.
Yeah.
I can let you and him down to the ground. That's safe enough.
All right, here's your bowling. Now climb into the bike.
Collins, I said I'll lower you to the ground. I'll wait for here for the ladder.
Oh, Murphy, you're weak as a cat. Now you climb into that biter. I'll tie you up like a turkey.
Okay. Okay, kid, you with it. I can just about me.
All right, that's better. Now get a good grip on this fellow.
I'll bewound somebody else.
I'm secure now.
Remember, snub that line with that hook in the wall.
All right, step off.
Here we go. Throw it away, Collins.
All right, use your feet, Murphy.
Yeah, let her go.
All right, bend off the wall with your feet.
Pay out that line faster.
All right, here's your package, Chief Collins. Special delivery.
Stand by below there. First aid for this fella.
Take your breath, Murphy. You don't look too well yourself. Ease them down, Collins. All right, Murphy. I got your foot.
Almost out, Chief. There, that does it.
You men, take this fellow to first aid. Well, who is it, Murphy?
I don't know, sir.
Here, lie down. He'll be back with a stretcher for you.
I don't know who it is.
It must be the watchman.
I've never gone. That's all he keeps saying. Collins brought him up.
What was Murphy, Collins yelling just now? Something about special delivery?
I don't know. I don't like the way he's acting, Chief. Maybe smoke poison.
Smoke poison? That's bad. That can make a man crazy.
He was...
Now, don't try to talk, Murphy. You're in bad shape yourself. Oh, stretcher! This way with the stretcher. And get that ladder up fast.
Get at the fire. That's what the rules say. I'll find the fire. I'll find that fire. Knock it down. I can knock a thousand fires, a million. I'm Tim Collins. That's who I am. Who? Who'd you say? I said Tim Collins. That's who I said. Yeah, never heard of him. Hey, what am I doing? My head feels funny. Oh yes, a fire. What's this? An extinguisher. Where'd I get that? Oh, a bracket on the wall. Yes, that's it. An extinguisher and a bracket on the wall. Get the extinguisher from the... Oh, no, Tim, you're crazy. You already got it. Come on, Collins, get to work. You see those crates? See that flame? Get in there, Collins. Get that extinguisher to work.
Tim Collins is in a bad spot, but help is on the way because Chief Cody has ordered ladders raised to the fourth floor windows of the burning warehouse. And with Chief Cody in charge, Tim's rescue will not be long delayed. For what happens next, listen to our next True to Life episode of The Firefighters.
Firefighters, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 25th, 1949. If you were a radio listener in the Washington, D.C. area during the time of that broadcast, you could have tuned away from Firefighters to hear part of the soap opera block on WRC with the show Widow Brown, a new sports update on WOL, WINX's sports page, or entertainer Gary Moore on WTOP. Now, to conclude this hour of continuing series, we bring you The Man in the Iron Mask with Episode 4 in the syndicated series from 1948.
The Man in the Iron Mask. When young Edmund Marchiali tells his guardian that he is in love with Marguerite Frederick, the daughter of a neighboring farmer, George Chemar is horrified. He sends a message to Cardinal Mazarin, who comes at once. The Cardinal is most perturbed. And the concern of these two men make it evident that young Edmund is in some way connected with the destiny of France.
Is it not true, Cardinal? If Edmund married and there were children, France would be split in half.
My dear Saint-Marc, Edmund must not marry and you will see to it.
But I have told you I'm powerless to stop him, this boy who has suddenly become a man. He has grown so quickly. He has made it clear that nothing will stop this marriage.
Bernard, I leave it to your ingenuity. The boy must not marry. Otherwise, you might lose your head. You heard what I said. There are too many issues at stake. Persuade him. Coerce him. Do what you like. But those are my final words. The boy must not marry.
I am doing what I can, Cardinal. But he has a strong will.
I shall wait here until tomorrow. I expect news from you before I leave your estate. Otherwise...
Come in. Edmund.
Yes, sir. Sit down, Edmund. Sit down.
Of course, Uncle. You sent for me?
Yes, Edmund. I want to have a serious talk with you.
You sound so grave, Uncle. Have I done something wrong?
Not knowingly, Edmund. As you know, you are like a son to me. I've known you ever since you were a baby. My feeling for you is the same feeling that a father has for a son.
Yes, I appreciate that, Uncle.
That is why I am so concerned about you and your future. This little girl, this peasant girl.
Marguerite?
Yes, Marguerite Frederick. You made me understand very clearly that you are determined to marry her.
Well, I love her, Uncle. And you love her, too, when you meet her.
Before you consider this matrimony further, there is something I must tell you.
Yes?
It concerns your father and mother.
Yes?
You have asked me several times why I never talked to them. You have wondered why I have avoided the subject. There is a reason, Edmund, as you have probably guessed. I have never mentioned your mother or your father because of the hereditary tray in the family.
What?
Your mother was locked in an asylum just after you were born. Oh. Her mother before her was insane. There were three members of the family insane in the previous generation.
Oh, Uncle George.
Then your dear father, perhaps it was through grief because of this terrible mental affliction which your mother suffered, he too lost his reason. I am sorry, Edmund. I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but I felt it was only fair to let you know the truth. In case
of what?
My dear boy, you must be brave. This insanity is hereditary. It has passed through three generations. You, with thanks be to God, have escaped it. But it might be that your children...
Oh, no.
It might be. Actually, it wouldn't be fair for you to be married at all. It wouldn't be fair to you, nor to your wife, nor to the unborn children. Now, please understand me, Edmund. I'm telling you this for your own good.
Well, this is... terrible news, Uncle. I never realized. And yet I understand now why you were so guarded about my dear. Oh, Uncle.
Now, be of good heart, my boy. There's a great deal in life for you. You shall have these estates when I die, all the friends you want. You can have your intrigues just the same. This peasant girl, for instance.
Don't, Uncle. Don't talk like that.
But, Edmund...
I won't have you talking of Marguerite in that fashion. I love her. I love her with all my heart and soul. In fact, I love her so much that... Yes, you're right, Uncle. It wouldn't be fair.
well does. That's the story of my life, my family. My mother insane, walled up for years. My father the same way. There was another generation before.
But, Edmund, there's nothing the matter with you. You have a clear mind, a noble mind. And your children... Oh, I know your children would have no chance.
I don't think you have read as I have read, Marguerite.
No, Edmund. I'm just an ignorant peasant, really.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way, you know, I didn't. I wouldn't have you altered, not one jot. What I meant was... I've read several books on this strange subject called heredity. It's an established fact, Marguerite.
You mean that our children might have the same taint as your mother or father?
Yes.
Oh.
And much as I love you, it wouldn't be right, would it? We would hate each other if...
Oh, Edmund, I believe in you. Yours is the finest mind that I've ever encountered. Your eyes are clear, and I know there's no taint where you're concerned. Edmund, I'm not afraid.
You mean that...
I'm strong, I'm healthy. My thoughts have always been good, and so have yours, dear. Oh, Edmund, I don't care what books you have read. I believe in our love. I believe in you and me. And I know that if we had children, they would be of you and me, not of any horrors in the past.
But, darling, I...
Oh, that would be the least of my worries. My fear, my constant fear... It's always been that your uncle might not approve of me. After all, I am only a peasant. But as far as this objection is concerned, we can fight it. We are stronger than our ancestors and their past.
Oh, darling, I do love you so. There was never anyone like you. You're not only gentle, womanly, tender, but you have strength, too. The strength to fight.
I have the strength to fight for my own. And you're mine, Edmund. All mine. Oh, if I thought you would benefit, if I thought you would be better with me away from you, I wouldn't hesitate. But I know that together we are strength.
Come with me, Marguerite.
Where?
To Castle St. Myer.
Oh, Edmund, I...
Remember what you said? Together we are strength. There's nothing to fear when we are together. Tell my uncle what you've told me. Then he'll understand the kind of woman you are. Oh, Marguerite, I was so unhappy when I came here to see you tonight. Now, it's just as though it were all a bad dream. There is a future for us both. Uncle, we've talked this out, both of us, and we aren't afraid.
You mean that...
We have decided that we shall be married. We feel we can rise above this horrible taint in my family. We aren't afraid.
But Edmund, your children...
Look at your ward, sire. You should know that his children would be children to be proud of. I would stake my life on it.
There you are, sir. That's our answer to this hereditary trial.
But my boy, you would be crazy. I, as your guardian, I wouldn't allow it, never.
I'm sorry, uncle, but your guardianship has passed. I'm of age. I can do whatever I wish.
Edmund, can't I appeal to your reason?
You have appealed to my reason, and reason tells us that we are doing what is right. We have confidence, and we have trust in our love. We are not afraid.
Then it is useless to argue with you further.
Quite useless. Our minds are made up. My only wish now is that you and Marguerite might love and respect each other. Because... You're the only two people I love in this world.
I'm afraid that's impossible, Edmund. This woman is a peasant.
Uncle George, I'm very hurt to hear you say that. She is the woman I love. That puts me on her level, so if you try to insult her, you insult me, too.
I see it's useless to argue with you further, Edmund. All I can say is I'm broken-hearted.
Uncle George, come back! Uncle George!
Oh, Edmund, what have we done?
Don't worry, Marguerite. He loves me. It will pass. Now that he understands how determined we are, he'll accept conditions as they are. I know, my dear. Uncle.
Come in. Oh, Tamar.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Cardinal. I know you've had a long day traveling. You need your night's rest, but I felt I had to come to you to talk this matter over with you.
Your ward?
Yes. The idea we discussed, pretending that there was insanity in Edmund's family, no use, Cardinal. The two of them are very much in love.
So?
You try to throw the responsibility on me, but I can't do anything. This ward of mine, if you knew how strong-willed he was.
I have a very good idea, as you should know if you believe in family trade.
I can't accept the responsibility. You hinted that I might lose my life. Very well, Cardinal, I lose it. Because I can do nothing to stop this marriage.
My dear Sir Ma, don't disturb yourself. Have you underestimated my own power?
Your power? Everybody knows you're the most powerful man in France.
Exactly. And power is such a useful ally when an emergency arises. I shall deal with it, my dear Saint-Marc.
But how?
The dungeons of the Bastille. So many go there and are never seen again. What did you say the name of this girl was? Marguerite, wasn't it? Marguerite Frederick.
The Man in the Iron Mask, Untuned to Yesterday, Episode 4 in a series from 1948, bringing the curtain down on this hour of continuing series Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the same time as we conclude the story on Johnny Dollar and continue the other series from Radio's Past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.